Chapter 10. He got off the road immediately. The Hope PD had predicted that he would rise to the challenge. It was an easy guess that the Despair PD would make the same assessment, and he didn't want to blunder into a parked Despair cruiser. That event would have an altogether different conclusion than a pleasant chat with the pretty Officer Vaughn. He looped 50 yards into the scrub north of the road, near enough to retain a sense of direction, far enough to stay out of a driver's peripheral vision. The night was cold, the ground was uneven, no chance of getting close to 4 miles an hour, no chance at all. He had no flashlight. A light would hurt him more than help him. It would be visible for a mile. It would be worse than climbing up on a rock and yelling, "Here I am." A slow mile later, the clock in his head told him it was 1:45 in the morning. He heard an aero engine again, far away to the west, blipping and feathering. A single-engine plane coming into land, a Cessna or a Beech or a Piper. Maybe the same one he had heard take off hours before. He listened to it until he imagined it had touched down and taxied. Then he started walking again. 4 hours later, he was about level with the center of downtown, 300 yards out in the scrub. He knew he must have left a healthy trail of footprints, but he didn't particularly care. He doubted that the Despair PD maintained a kennel full of bloodhounds or ran aerial surveillance from a helicopter. As long as he stayed off the roads and the sidewalks, he was as good as invisible. He sensed the bulk of another boat-sized table rock and hunkered down behind it. The night was still cold. He unwrapped his stuff and drank water and ate a power bar. Then he repacked his bag and stood up behind the rock and turned to study the town. He leaned against the rock with his elbows out and his forearms flat on its top surface and his chin resting on his stacked fists. At first, he saw nothing, just darkness and stillness, and the hidden glow from occasional lit windows. Farther in the distance, he saw more lights and sensed more activity. The residential areas, he guessed. He figured people were getting up for work. 10 minutes later, he saw headlight beams coming north. 2, 3 sets. Their light funneled through the cross streets and bounced and dipped and threw long shadows straight toward him. He stayed where he was, just watching. The beams paused at Main Street and then swept west. More came after them. Soon, every cross street was lit up bright by long processions of vehicles. It was like the day was dawning in the south. There were sedans and pickup trucks and old model SUVs. They all drove north to Main Street and paused and jostled and swung west toward where Vaughn had said the recycling plant was. A company town. 6 o'clock in the morning. The people of Despair going to work. Reacher followed them on foot, 400 yards to the north. He stumbled on through the crusted scrub, tracking the road. The last truck got ahead of him, and he followed the red chain of taillights with his eyes. A mile or more ahead, the horizon was lit up with an immense glow. Not dawn. That was going to happen behind him, to the east. The glow to the west was from arc lighting. There seemed to be a huge rectangle of lights on poles surrounding some kind of a massive arena. It looked to be about a mile long, maybe a half mile wide, the biggest metal recycling plant in Colorado, Vaughn had said. No kidding, Reacher thought. Looks like the biggest in the world. White steam and dirty black smoke drifted here and there in the glow. In front of it, the long convoy of vehicles peeled off and parked in neat rows on acres of beaten scrub. Their headlights swung and bounced and then shut down, one by one. Reacher holed up again, 1/4 mile short and 1/4 mile north of the gate, watched men file inside, shuffling forward in a long line, lunch pails in their hands. The gate was narrow, a personnel entrance, not a vehicle entrance. Reacher guessed the vehicle entrance was on the other side of the complex, convenient for the highway spurs. The sky was lightening behind him. Landscape features were becoming visible. The terrain was basically flat, but up close it was pitted with enough humps and dips and rocks to provide decent concealment. The earth was sandy and tan. There were occasional scrubby bushes. There was nothing interesting anywhere, nothing to attract hikers, not attractive picnic territory. Reacher expected to spend the day alone. The last worker filed inside and the personnel gate closed. Reacher moved on, staying hidden, but looking for elevation where he could find it. The recycling plant was truly enormous. It was ringed by an endless solid wall welded out of metal plates painted white. The wall was topped with a continuous horizontal cylinder 6 feet in diameter, impossible to climb, like a supermax prison. His initial estimate of the size of the place had been conservative. It looked bigger than the town itself, like a tail that wags a dog. Despair was not a town with a plant attached. It was a factory with a dormitory outside its gates. Work was starting inside. Reacher heard the groan of heavy machinery and the ringing sound of metal on metal and saw the flare and spark of cutting torches. He moved all the way around to the northwest corner, 15 minutes past walk. The vehicle gate was right there. A section of the wall was standing open. A wide road ran from the horizon straight to it. The road looked to be smooth and solid, built for heavy trucks. The road was a problem. If Reacher wanted to continue his counterclockwise progress, he would have to cross it somewhere. He would be exposed. His dark clothes would stand out in the coming daylight. But to who, exactly? He guessed that his spare cops would stay in town east of the plant, and he didn't expect any roving surveillance teams out of the plant itself. But that was exactly what he got. 2 white Chevy Tahoes came out of the vehicle gate. They drove 50 yards down the road and then plunged off it, one to the left and one to the right, onto beaten tracks of packed scrub created by endless previous excursions. The Tahoes had raised off-road suspensions and big white-lettered tires and the word security stenciled in black across their doors. They drove slowly, maybe 20 miles an hour, one clockwise, one counterclockwise, as if they intended to lap the plant all day long. Reacher hated turning back. He struck out west, staying in the dips and washes as far as possible, and keeping boulders between himself and the plant. 10 minutes later, the natural terrain gave way to where the land had been cleared and graded for the road. The near shoulder was maybe 10 yards wide, made of packed sand, dotted with stunted second-growth weeds. The roadbed was 15 or 16 yards wide. 2 lanes with a bright yellow line between. Smooth, blacktop. The far shoulder was another 10 yards wide. Total distance, 35 yards. Minimum. Reacher was no kind of a sprinter. As any kind of a runner, he was pretty slow. His best attempt at speed was barely faster than a quick walk. He crouched just east of the last available table rock and watched for the Tahoes. They came around much less often than he had predicted, which was inexplicable, but good. What wasn't good was that the road itself was starting to get busy. Reacher knew he should have seen that coming. The largest recycling plant in Colorado clearly needed input, and it clearly produced output. They didn't dig stuff out of the scrub and then bury it again. They trucked scrap in and then trucked ingots out. A lot of scrap and a lot of ingots. Shortly after 7 o'clock in the morning, a flatbed semi roared out of the gate and lumbered onto the road. It had Indiana plates and was laden with bright steel bars. It drove 100 yards and was passed by another flatbed heading inward. This one had Oregon plates and was loaded with crushed cars, dozens of them, their chipped and battered paint layered like thin stripes. A container truck with Canadian plates left the plant and passed the Oregon semi. Then the counterclockwise Tahoe showed up and bounced across the roadbed and kept on going. 3 minutes later, its clockwise partner rotated in the opposite direction. Another semi left the plant and another headed in. A mile west, Reacher saw a third approaching, wobbling and shimmering in the morning haze. Way behind it, a fourth that was like Times Square. Inside the plant, giant gantry cranes were moving and cascades of welding sparks were showering everywhere. Smoke was rising and fierce blasts of heat from furnaces were distorting the air. There were muted noises, the chatter of air hammers, clangs of sheet metal, metallic tearing sounds, deep sonorous rings like massive impacts on a blacksmith's anvil. Reacher drank more water and ate another power bar. Then he repacked his plastic sack and waited for the Tahoes to pass one more time and just got up and walked across the road. He passed within 40 yards of two speeding trucks, one inbound, one outbound. He accepted the risk of being seen. For one thing, he had no real choice. For another, he figured it was a question of degrees of separation. Would a truck driver tell a plant foreman he had seen a pedestrian? Would the plant foreman call the security office? Would the security office call the town cops? Unlikely. And even if it happened, response time would be slow. Reacher would be back in the weeds well before the Crown Vicks showed up, and the Crown Vicks would be no good off-road. The Tahoes would stick to their own private itineraries. Safe enough. He made it onward to where the rocks and the humps and the dips resumed and headed south, tracking the long side of the plant. The wall continued. It was maybe 14 feet high, welded out of what looked like the roofs of old cars. Each panel had a slight convex curve. They made the whole thing look quilted. The 6-foot cylinder along the top looked to be assembled from the same material, molded in giant presses to the correct contour and welded together in a seamless run. Then the whole assembly had been sprayed glossy white. It took Reacher 26 minutes to walk the length of the plant, which made it more than a mile long. At its far southwest corner, he saw why the Tahoes were so slow. There was a second walled compound, another huge rectangle similar size. Tire tracks showed that the Tahoes were lapping it, too, passing and repassing through a 50-yard bottleneck in a giant, distorted figure eight. Reacher was suddenly exposed. His position was good relative to the first compound, not so good relative to the second. The clockwise Tahoe would sweep through the gap and make a wide turn and come pretty close. He backed off again, aiming for a low boulder. He got halfway across a shallow pan of scrub. Then he heard tires on dirt. He dropped flat to the ground, face down, watching.